Welcome to the podcast Benzo Tired. I'm your host, Neftel Benesty, and I'm Dutch. Join me on my journey into the world of benzodiazepines, withdrawal, bind, and more. Disclaimer, always consult your physician for medical advice. This is episode 30, Jane Kultza, and today it's October 31st, 2023. In this episode, Jane Kultza from South Africa. Jane got prescribed several psychotropic drugs. The first drug she was prescribed was Prozac at 18 years old, after a 15-minute consultation with a psychiatrist who diagnosed her with a bipolar disorder and having a chemical imbalance. Over the years, she was put on a staggering amount of different drugs, including Vivitril, which is clonazepam, Seroquel, which is quetiapine, and Cymbalta, also known as duloxetine. Jane has had an excruciating withdrawal, but she is determined to get off all the drugs and create awareness. Jane has written a poem she shares on the show. This episode is a little different from others, seeing Jane's story didn't start with a benzodiazepine, but nonetheless recognizable for many in the benzodiazepine harmed community. Be advised, this episode may be perceived triggering for some listeners. This episode consists out of two segments. One of them is Jane reading her poem aloud, and the second part is the interview, and in the show notes you will find timestamps indicating where these are.
My journey on and off psychotropic drugs. Before the slippery slope, I wasn't the quietest. I was just 18 when I first saw a psychiatrist. Much had happened for my soul to aggravate. For pseudoscience, I was a perfect candidate. 8 friends and family had passed away. The abuse, etc., my life was a cliche. Little did I know that it was perfectly usual. My reactions to trauma were not delusional. But instead of processing through therapy, he chose Prozac to prescribe to me. My crying disappeared, as did my laughter. I wish I knew I was heading for disaster. I trusted that psych with his medical degree. I was in good hands, he would guarantee. Not once did he inform me about the risks. I didn't even know side effects exist. Not long after that, I struggled to sleep. In polypharmacy, I would be knee-deep. Seroquel was prescribed without any warning, made it so difficult to get up in the morning. The anorexia and other consequences began, all because I had trusted this man. He told me I suffered from something called bipolar, and the drugs were simply a mood controller. After many years in his consultations, my family urged me to make new considerations. Something was amiss with my disposition, but to leave the site caused me indecision. Not realizing I was under his hypnosis, my symptoms explained away by a diagnosis. "You are bipolar, it's not the drugs." To my concerns, he gave many shoulder shrugs. Those couple of pills became many more. Many days I couldn't peel myself off the floor. Finally, I found a new psychiatrist to see. Another I trusted because of his degree. More pills were added to my growing list, but again, my theories were simply dismissed. Suddenly, I experienced my first mental break. You see, your diagnosis is not a mistake. I was then admitted to a terrible psych ward. Hallucinations prevented me from being bored. New drugs were added and higher doses convinced me all part of the psychiatric quotas. After medical aid was depleted, I was released. My reputation at work had suddenly decreased. Everyone knew I was considered to be mad. On handfuls of drugs, I couldn't be more sad. More than 20 psychiatrists I would see, unfortunately, they would all agree. They confirmed my brain had a disorder. I looked like a pharmacy with all the drugs I would order. Spiraling in destruction, I became addicted to booze. My life and my sanity, I would almost lose. Until I jumped in front of a bus, rehab was something I didn't discuss. I finally agreed after the rape. I'd been self-medicating to find an escape. Benzos were preferred to help me quit the drinks, and finally I got to chat to some shrinks. Without explanation, the benzos were prescribed. None of the effects were even described. I was like a zombie on handfuls of pills, always accused of making mountains out of molehills. My second mental break was in 2008. Again, my sanity was up for debate. I had constant thoughts to end my life on so many drugs, yet overwhelmed with strife. Everything looked like a weapon to commit suicide. The war in my head with myself a collide. I could never remember what my therapist had said. All I knew for sure, I wanted to be dead. Always freezing cold, I stood out like a sore thumb. Brain fog and disconnection made me look dumb. An upset stomach and pains through the roof. The doctor said this was bipolar proof. For 18 years, I believed their lies, but what happened next would be the biggest surprise. My final mental break came in late 2016, admitted to the worst rehab I have ever been. They quadrupled those doses of all of my pills while trying to teach me new life skills. The tremors became convulsion-like shakes, drugged up to my eyeballs. I struggled to wake. Waiting in pill queues like cattle going to slaughter, I was a zombie. My mom didn't recognize her daughter. Paranoia, delusions, disorientation set in. Yet another slippery slope would then begin. Coerced into believing that my head was sick, something made me realize I was part of a trick. Through the haze of drugs, my soul was disturbed. The biggest revelation suddenly occurred. So if my head was sick, why not examine my brain? Besides the chemical imbalance lie you've left yet to explain, why are you so sure of a disease for which there are no tests? You're simply following what the DSM-5 suggests. Surely a scan of my brain would need to be done. Test the organ you're treating, but there was none. The prognosis was just based on your opinion, and you are Big Pharma's greedy minion. If the drugs really helped, why am I not better? My body is now dependent to my psychiatrist, a debtor. You've given me so many pills for an organ you did not test, and I must just agree with everything you suggest. You claim my symptoms are that of a disorder. The possibilities for this sickness, though, couldn't be broader. You protect the drugs as though they're your baby. That the drugs are the problem is not even a maybe. You simply deny that the drugs can cause harm. Even the manufacturer raises the alarm. Why are you all ignorant? Is it stupidity or greed that makes you prescribe pills that people don't need? If you had half a brain cell, you would realize the chemical imbalance is part of the lies. You chose deception to make a quick buck. Disease equals drugs, and then the patient is stuck. I was simply an experiment for their observation. They knew nothing about drug cessation. They chopped and changed my drugs at will as they exhausted my medical insurance bill. Unable to speak or make sense of reality, Jane checked out my brain and absentee. My mom finally threw her toys out the cot. To get me released, she gave her best shot. The drugs were many and the dosages increased. My mom saved my life as she got me released. 2 months to integrate back into society. I've never had such bad anxiety. Once I was home and my brain returned, I began sharing what I had learned. About psychiatry, I knew it was dark. A new journey I was about to embark. 3 more quacks I was forced to see. All I wished for was to live carefree. From what I learned, I could see the end, but a fight for my life I needed to defend. 4 years later, I was finally ready after decades of being emotionally unsteady. All my research documented pen on paper. I took the plunge and began my taper. prescribed cold turkey or 5 pills overnight. Did she really not know, or was it just spite? Seizures, convulsions, and torture ensued. Brain zaps feel like your brain is being stewed. She claimed I was one in a million and withdrawal is rare. Dystonia, vomiting, chills, and losing my hair. I lost 9 kilograms in under 8 weeks. She knew nothing about the tapering techniques. Many times I screamed for Jesus to take the wheel. About 8 months later, I began to heal. She thought I was kidding, that I almost died. I decided my journey would be others' guide. To come off antidepressants, I was finally prepared. Just alternate your doses, she declared. 60-30, 60-30 would do the trick. Besides the first taper, I've never been so sick. Like a volcano eruption began the rage. Without cognitive clarity, I could not engage. I wanted to murder everything that moved. My outbursts for no reason were disapproved. Besides images of murder was the brain pressure. Nothing eased it or made it lesser. I wanted to drill a hole in my head. Many others experienced this from what I have read. I was at the end of what I could possibly bear and decided to end my taper right there. Off 60 milligrams, I chose cold turkey. The akathisia began as my movements were jerky. I found genuine help through support online. So many underwent the same experience as mine. I'm not a rare case, as she would have me believe. I was forced to seek alternatives to find reprieve. She gaslit me to believe I was one in a million. Just a rare case of an unusual civilian. Into research about withdrawal, I took a deep dive, only to find out how lucky I was to be alive. I then prepared to taper from an antipsychotic. Little did I know, my life would become chaotic. Out of the blue, I got hectic pains in my right wrist. Normal activities and doing anything seriously missed. Real tests were done to diagnose tendonitis. And in December, I was told I also have costochondritis. Then came the itches, jerks, and backache. More drugs were prescribed, which I refused to take. In a bowl of yogurt, I take black seed oil. No risks, no symptoms, and nothing to spoil. I noticed the benefits straight away. The rewards make it possible to have it every day. I got impatient with the taper and reduced too quick. Again, I became extremely sick. This time, I was forced to seek hospital admission. Even the nurses never heard of this tapering condition. They tried to tell me that I needed more meds. Seriously, are all doctors sick in their head? It's the drugs making me sick, I tried to explain. But just like my psych, they treated me with disdain. The withdrawal from meds, doctors refused to acknowledge. They obviously don't learn about tapering at college. Forced to reinstate my previous dose, again, I saw death. It was seriously close. To taper, was supposed to reduce after 30 days. But from the withdrawals, my mind's in a haze. I'm too scared to reduce again, the Seroquel. Tapering is like living in hell. I've endured 35 long months of tapering. Fortunately, my determination is unwavering. The symptoms are from the drugs, but the doctors denied, despite the warnings in the manufacturer's guide. After all this time of tapering, I can safely proclaim the withdrawal symptoms and the side effects are the same. The side effects of the drugs when you initially commence are the identical symptoms of tapering, just far more intense. After many failed strategies of trying to withdraw, I'm always the one pulling the short straw. I continued my tapering probe and investigation, and like many others, I couldn't trust my psych's narration. The 5 to 10% reduction of the previous dose is a near perfect strategy. This is very close. Okay, hold for 4 weeks before your next reduction. The best solution to prevent brain destruction. The key to note is as the dosages become lower, this tapering strategy must then become slower. Between hyperbolic and linear, this is the change. The latter remains the same reduction throughout the range. Reduce by the set percentage until the very end, whereas hyperbolic gives your receptors more time to mend. 6 more weeks for my body to try and regulate before my next reduction is up for debate. The anguish I've experienced should be classed as criminal. There are better ways to taper where the harm is minimal. It took me years of research to find this explanation. This should have been my psychiatrist's obligation. They took an oath to first do no harm. Yet our senses and stabilities and stability with the drugs they disarm. At least another 2 years of tapering I need to withstand. I share this because I've experienced all of this firsthand. I personally understand the risks and ramifications, how these neurotoxins inflict brain chemical fluctuations. Psychiatrists especially need to be skilled to slow taper. This needs to be included in the final qualification paper. No matter what it takes, I will highlight this mission, that withdrawal exists and it's not the condition. You see, quick reductions produce more side effects so that drugs can be prescribed for all the defects. You will notice the psychiatric industry is not damaged, but rather a scam of how over-medication is managed. All psychiatrists and doctors need to finally admit to prescribe toxic allopathic, you should require a permit. The age to prescribe has become younger and younger. For backhanded prescription dividends, the doctors hunger. It's not about our health, but rather their greed. They're willing to disregard their promise and creed. The worst are those who side with Big Pharma. The life you deserved will be served up by karma. No matter what it takes, I'll be the people's voice for those who died not knowing they had another choice. This industry of harm needs to be brought to its knees. Fortunately, there are many with me who agrees. Dr. Bregan, Dr. McFillan, Dr. Ashton, Dr. Healy have all made it possible for me to speak freely of the dreadful consequences of the harmful substance for which there is an endless abundance. My taper, like my story, has not come to an end. I've endured this road for others I will defend. It's time to finally draw the line in the sand. These drugs are poisonous and need to get banned. I hope that from my slippery slope that you will research alternative ways to cope. Poisonous pills maim and disable, they're not the solution. Especially long term, you'll sit with body pollution.
Hi Jane, welcome to Benzo Tired.
Hi, Naftal. Thank you so much for this opportunity to chat to you. I'm so looking forward to this. Thank you.
Me too. First of all, thank you for sharing your beautiful poem with the audience. So where do we begin in your journey? Because it seems like you got into psychiatry very young.
Yes, that's true. So I had quite a lot of death surrounding me growing up, which I think is where the problems began. Both my sisters died, my uncle died, my cousin committed suicide, my best friend committed suicide. So this was by the time I was 18. There were already these traumas that were part of my existence and my psyche, and for quite a long time I looked at it, what is the common denominator? The common denominator between all the trauma is me and people leaving and immigrating. I mean, now that's so obviously not my fault. But at the time, it was, you know, something I thought was my fault. And then when I left high school, I went to work at a big corporate, and a lot of my friends went to study. And I think there was just that disconnect of now trying to find a new circle of friends and fit in a different environment. And that's when I first went to see the psychiatrist, the very first psychiatrist job. I was 18. I was working in corporate. I wasn't coping with so many different aspects and obviously what had happened up till that point. And he promptly put me on to Prozac. And yeah, I didn't see the downfalls with the Prozac, but people around me and family started asking me, you know, like, you don't laugh anymore, but it's weird that you don't take people screaming at you so personally. What's going on? A lot of people like ask, are you on drugs, like street drugs?
Right. Well,
and
to the audience that isn't aware of Prozac, and I need to look for the generic name, because you say it in your poem, you know, it sounds like it blunted you.
Most definitely, yes, most definitely. And I mean, that's where the terrible anxiety started. The depression or whatever I had going on at that time just increased dramatically. I was always tired. I had stomach issues, lack of energy. There were so many things that was, I didn't see it as sudden, or I hardly even really noticed it. But other people started seeing all these new symptoms coming about with me. And that's when I said, I know, but that's the bipolar, because that's what the doctor said, you know.
Was that the first psychiatrist that you saw, he diagnosed you with bipolar?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And you needed Prozac.
Yes, that's what he said. Okay. Yes. It was a 15-minute consultation with an in-house psychiatrist. And he was like, listen, everything you've described to me, you've definitely got bipolar. Here's your Prozac. See me in 3 months. And
wow.
Then the next patient is waiting at the door. And I was like, okay, this is very new to me. And yeah, you just go with it because that's what a doctor said. You know, they've got this authority.
And you're 18. You're so young.
Yes, you don't know anything.
Right. So if you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you start taking the Prozac, it doesn't make you feel better, but you're not really noticing. And maybe you can share with the audience, maybe you're like, this is what the doctor says. I've got this and this condition and I need this pill. And you just blindly trusted him. Now, you mentioned that your family and friends or your surroundings are noticing things.
Yes. They, particularly, I was quite an emotional person. So somebody could just look at me wrong and I would burst into tears, and that disappeared. So yes, maybe it's a great thing, but I also stopped laughing. You know, nothing was funny anymore. And there were so many instances where other people could see it, but I couldn't see it.
The
changes that came about.
Right. Yeah. So what happened? Because we know, because, you know, we've heard your poem, there's going to be so many drugs prescribed to you. So when do more drugs kind of enter your life?
So when I went back to see that specific psychiatrist within like the 3 or 6 months time that he asked me to come back to him, he was like, how are you feeling? And I'm like, oh, terrible. You know, I can't sleep, shake like a leaf. There were just so many side effects. The anxiety was through the roof, and I didn't actually call it anxiety. I remember telling him, I'm stressed, you know, I can't cope. And at that stage, I didn't have the knowledge that I have now. So it was, I was so disconnected from what I was actually feeling, and I almost feel now that it was partly my fault for being, you know, the days I saw him were the days that I was like literally falling apart. So if he'd seen me a week prior, it might have not been that bad. So that is something I still wrestle with. But in all those appointments, every time I saw him, it was a new prescription, a new drug, and he would just increase the dosages of the previous medications.
Right.
And if only I had known then what I know now, I would never even have touched any of it with a barge pole. But I just trusted that he was saying, you know, you've got this chemical imbalance, you've got bipolar, and this is what you need. And I
Right.
just unfortunately blindly trusted him.
Can you remember what this specific psychiatrist prescribed to you other than the Prozac?
Seroquel, I know he definitely prescribed the Seroquel. At a later stage with a different psychiatrist, that's when the benzos came on.
Right.
And
Just for the international audience, Prozac, the generic name is fluoxetine,
that's right,
fluoxetine. And for
yes.
Seroquel, as you know, it's been prescribed to so many of us. Unfortunately, that is quetiapine.
I actually went into the rehab for depression.
Right.
And in that initial consultation where they like give you an interview and you've got to answer some questions about your lifestyle, only at that moment I realized I have a problem with alcohol. I went in for depression and very quickly realized that I was there as well for alcohol.
Right.
But
So can you
being
share
that,
with the audience when did you start drinking alcohol? When does this start?
that was already school days. But it just heightened with everything that had gone on with all the deaths and stuff. There was a
Right.
lot of other things that went on as well. And I just used alcohol to numb everything.
Right. So you go into this rehab center, you're already on several psych meds, including Seroquel and Prozac, and you're drinking alcohol, and you do this little survey. Alcohol is a problem. What happens at this center?
So that is where I was put on quite a lot of drugs as well.
They're not touching any of your other drugs, they're just giving you more stuff.
Yes, so I was on quite a lot more stuff. There was about a time more or less when I think the antidepressants and that were not as high because I remember being put on Dormican, and
Dormicum, yeah, I was on that. That's midazolam. That's Versed. That is something that you get in the hospital for a procedure.
it didn't work for me at all. And they chopped and changed, and by the time I came out, I think I was on a lower dose of most of the drugs. Also, because I was struggling to connect with the therapists in there and they teach you life skills and that sort of thing. And I was just like struggling to make sense of what was going on. So I think that was about the time where I was on the least amount of drugs by the time I came out because I spent 3 months there.
Right.
So it was quite an extended period of time. And then I stayed sober for 10 months. And then I was an idiot and I went back to everything. And yeah, then the drinking was really bad at one stage. And I was on huge amounts of drugs, prescription pills. And then I fell on my head in 2010.
Okay.
Yes, I've got a lack of scar here above my eyebrow.
Okay, I can't
And
see it, but
it
what happens next?
was the biggest wake-up call of my life. It was like God hit me on the head with a pavement. to get through to me that I need to stop my shit. Stop my nonsense. Sorry,
Right.
I swore.
No, you can swear here.
And yeah, that's when I really took a good look at my life and where I was going and what I was doing with it. And then I managed to not stop drinking, but I don't drink as much. So there'll be periods of my life where I don't drink for 5 years. And then I'll start drinking again and only drink on Friday night and have like two drinks and that's it.
Right.
So fortunately, I'm one of those people that can do that. I know it's not like that for everybody. And then it all came to a head in 2016. I'd left the corporate world where I'd been since I'd left school. And I wanted to start my own company, which I did. And in that year, so many things had happened within our family, and I'd lost more friends. And sillily enough, I went to the doctor saying to my GP, my general practitioner, I said to her, I'm not coping. It was October 2016. I said to her, I'm not coping. I'm just depressed. This person, that person has died. This is what's happened. And I don't feel like waking up in the morning. Or I said something along those lines.
Right.
And she got on the phone and I didn't know who she's calling. She didn't say anything. Her facial expressions changed. And I thought, oh my gosh, what's going on? And she spoke to somebody about getting a bed organized. And I was like, what is going on? And she said, no, I need to book you into rehab immediately because you're a danger to yourself and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, I need a pill to cope, because that was my mentality back then, that I still needed medication to cope.
Right.
And she put me into this horrific mental health facility. And that same night that I went in, I was on 25 milligrams of Seroquel. They immediately put me up to 200 milligrams of Seroquel.
Whoa, okay.
They added a whole lot of drugs, and I was walking around drooling, and they were telling me I'm getting better. I was shaking like a jackhammer. I couldn't sit properly on a chair. I was like literally like a real-life jackhammer, almost jumping up and down from having, it wasn't just tremors, it was that bad shaking.
Akathisia?
It could quite possibly have been. At that stage, I didn't know any of this.
Right, right.
And I went to see her the next day. I could hardly walk. I could not use the stairs because it looked like they were moving, and it was a terrible experience. And I walked into her office convinced that I was about to die. And she said to me, you look fantastic. The drugs are working. And I thought to myself,
oh my gosh,
this woman is trying to kill me. And that is where I had this like epiphany moment of, hang on, but they haven't looked in my brain. How do they know my brain is sick if they haven't looked in my brain? And that's where all of this began, of trying to see what is going on. Am I the only one that feels like this? Because when I spoke to anybody, everybody said, oh, you're paranoid.
Right.
You know,
just for the audience, were you on benzodiazepines once you got in there, or did they put you on benzos? Can you remember?
No, I was already on benzos.
Were you on one benzo or several?
I know, probably a few. I don't remember the names, but I know that I was on multiple of the different drug categories. So like the antidepressants, I was on multiple antidepressants, multiple antipsychotics, multiple benzodiazepines, sleeping tablets, mood stabilizers, tranquilizers, all of that. And at one stage, my mom came to visit me, and I just looked at her like I knew She's familiar to me, but I couldn't place where I know her from. And the psychiatrist is saying, "You are fantastic." And yeah,
Wow.
it's just that place. And so many people who I've heard that have been to that particular place have said the identical story. They go in on one antidepressant and
Yep.
immediately they're placed on three or four different antidepressants and mood
Yep.
stabilizers and all sorts of stuff they
Yep.
really don't need, and
Yep.
they come out like an absolute zombie.
Yep. So you survive this ordeal magically because you are so pumped with so many drugs, and clearly you have derealization and all of that because you must have been a mess with so many drugs
Big
pumped into
time.
you. And it seems, and I haven't ever committed myself to, luckily, to one of these wards or whatever, but I know how awful it can get, and I just can't imagine how it's like to be in a facility and where you may still think that they know best, and you're feeling so horrible and so disconnected, and they're saying, "Oh, girl, you look great. You're doing so well." So yeah.
Yes, it's absolutely terrifying because you've been committed or admitted for a set period of time, and for those first few weeks or however long it is, you don't have visitors, you can't leave. It's almost like you are cut off from any normality. So the
Yeah.
only people that can hear your concerns are people who are struggling just as much as you are, and the people who are making you struggle. So
Exactly.
you feel so isolated and alone, and then they tell you, well, you're delusional. You're having hallucinations when you verbalize that I don't feel safe here anymore, then suddenly you've got much bigger problems.
Right. It's such an unsafe, toxic environment. It's,
Most definitely.
gosh, okay, you survived this ordeal, and I guess something is starting to like make sense to you that, they're wrong and you're not. So you get released, or you release yourself. Then what happens?
Then that was near the end of 2016. 2017, January, I started looking on Google because I didn't know about DuckDuckGo and Yandex and all of these other search engines. And I just Googled something to find about something like to find out, does anybody else feel the way I feel about psychiatry? And at
Right.
some point, I must have typed in something like the dark truth or the bad side of psychiatry or something like that. And I came across Dr. Peter Breggin. All his videos were still up on YouTube, fortunately. And I watched them incessantly, one after the next, after the next. I was making notes. I was jumping for joy that there was this world-renowned psychiatrist who was speaking out against his own field, sharing the dangers of diagnosis and drugs and the whole calamity of psychiatry and what the industry of harm is doing to millions of people across the world. And I was like, hallelujah, I'm not alone. And
Right.
that is what catapulted my whole journey because everybody commenting on those videos, I'd go and look up them and see if they'd published anything. And anybody he mentioned in the videos, I wrote all of the names down and I'd go and look up their what they put out, whether it was in video or writing or whatever. And that is how all of this began. So
So it's interesting because not a whole lot of people have that journey that you have, that you feel so gaslighted or gaslit by psychiatry that you're like, something is wrong with that field. You're the first story that I heard of or am hearing of that is kind of like, what's wrong with psychiatry? So when does it connect to the drugs for you?
It was in about 2018, around there, It was now like 2 years later of doing nonstop research, and there was still this nagging little voice in the back of my head, like, you are bipolar after all, so don't get too excited about all of this. And I went to see a homeopath, and she did this test on my body that measures all your blood levels and cells and all the different functions of your body. And she told me, based on the tests that this machine had done, that my adrenal gland was pumping adrenaline 24/7. So when I'm relaxed, when I'm trying to relax after the day and I'm just at home chilling out, it's busy pumping adrenaline. And that is why I permanently have these heart palpitations and I'm permanently anxious and looking over my shoulder and being highly strung all of the time. And I said to her, well, what could possibly cause that? And she asked me, well, are you on psychiatric medications? And I said to her, yes, I'm on this. And when her face like almost dropped, I was like, okay, there must be a connection here. And we had a discussion around that. And based on that, I started doing a lot more research specifically for my specific pills. And at that point was the first time that I took the patient information leaflet out the box and actually started reading the side effects. And
Right.
that when it dawned on me, I cried so much that day. I scream cried because I had this sudden realization that everything that had been blamed on me that was wrong with Jane, Jane's too sensitive, Jane's making moles out of mole, mountains out of molehills, all this blame that was put on me as a person was actually on these damn drugs that I did not need. And that is where this huge realization came. And I was, oh, it was like a washing machine of emotions at the same time. I was ecstatic that I wasn't disordered like they told me, but I was devastated that my entire adulthood had been ruined, on these damn drugs.
Right. Okay. So, we all have that moment where we're like, especially with benzodiazepines, when you find the Ashton manual and your world kind of collapses and you're like, what the fuck has happened? And why did I eat this poison? And I want to come off. What the hell? So what do you do? Do you try to taper? Do you try to find information online on how to come off all of these drugs? Where do you even start? You're on so many meds. How many meds were you on?
Oh, that was a lot more than 13. I started the tapering journey on 13 drugs. But prior to that, there were so many more. And at some point, I just threw them all away, which I think is something so many of us have done at
You cold
some point,
turkey.
maybe like, I can't do this, I'm not doing this. And I just threw everything in the toilet. And a few weeks later, I crashed so badly. It was physically, mentally, emotionally, it was terrible. And then when I went back to the doctor and told her what I'd done, oh, you know how it is. And excuse me, she just put me on a whole lot more. And I started doing the research slowly. But I was still working at that stage, two different jobs. So I didn't apply myself as much as I should have. But by the time it came to November 2020, I was ready. I thought by then I had enough information to know, well, I thought, which was actually very limited compared to what I know now. I can kick myself because I went into the psychiatrist's office. I said, this is the drugs I'm on. I plan to come off everything. Will you help me? And she said, oh no, you can't come off everything. I told her, she asked what I'm diagnosed with. I told her bipolar. And she said, no, you can't come off everything, but we'll definitely reduce. And I was like, no, you don't understand. Either it's going to be you that's going to help me get off everything, or I'm going to go find somebody who can help me. So she agreed and she said, okay, it's fine. We'll get you off everything in 6 months. And I still thought, sure, that's quick. But any case, she's a psychiatrist. Maybe I've got the wrong research. Maybe everybody I've been listening to is incorrect.
And not only that, if someone is telling you, like, hey, I promise you, like, it's only going to take 6 months and you'll be off all the meds. I mean, wouldn't we just all want that? Don't we want to trust our psychiatrist? Don't we want to get off the drugs? You know, we still want to believe them. So I totally get it. So how are the 6 months when you're when you're tapering these things?
Oh, my gosh. So that was the November I saw her. And then some of them she took off immediately, and then the others she halved and off. So the 19th of January 2021, I came off the Urbanol, which is clobazam, the Rivotril, which is clonazepam.
Oh, gosh.
Indoblock, which is a beta blocker. The Wellbutrin, which is an antidepressant, and the Arvidol, which is zolpidem, a hypnotic.
That's a Z drug. Yes.
All of those.
And that's either for the Americans and Canadians listening, that is either Ambien or Lunesta.
Yes.
One of the two. Yes. Okay. You have been on literally every drug, it seems. So,
yes.
I mean, maybe it's hard to tell the audience what withdrawal symptom was caused by what, but, you know, it can be anything. But what were your symptoms?
Oh, my gosh. How long do you have?
Yeah, I know. It can be the whole litany. What were the worst ones to you?
The worst was the seizures and the brain zaps and the projectile vomiting. I could not use my cell phone because of the light of the cell phone would just induce immediate vomiting. Every curtain in my house and every blind was closed because the sunlight was just extra bright. Every little noise I could hear, like a moth flying outside, anything and everything aggravated me. My skin was prickly and sore and sensitive. I sweated like a pig. When I lay down, the bed was wet within a few minutes. I'd constantly be changing sheets and pajamas and pillow. It was hell on earth. I've never experienced something so vicious. I remember at one stage, I couldn't get from my bedroom, from my bed to the toilet quickly enough. And I kept on having to clean up mess after mess. So I eventually took my pillow and my duvet and I went and I lay in the bathroom so that I could be close to the toilet. And even that, I wasn't quick enough to sit up and be sick. And eventually, at some point, I know I was like in between realities or consciousness. And I woke up in my own mess. I was covered, my duvet, myself, everything. And I was like, it was horrific. I was convinced that was it. That was my last days on earth. I don't wish that on anybody.
It is hell. It is torture. It is otherworldly. Now, my question to you is, like, you're doing this 6 month taper. This is happening during the 6 month taper. Did you ever thought like, hey, maybe I should call in or pause or do something? Did you seek help within those 6 months, or was it kind of like, I just want to get through the 6 months and hopefully I'll be done?
I did message her and tell her that I'm dying because I was convinced I was dying. I said to her, you know, these are my symptoms. And she just said to me, well, that's unusual. You're a very rare case. I've never heard of that before. You know, do you want to take something? I can prescribe you something. And I was like, no,
pills. Oh, my God.
No, I don't want anything.
Oh, gosh.
And it was only at about the 3 month mark of not sleeping at all, like, or hardly any. I agreed to go on to trazodone,
Right.
which is an antidepressant.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
I took that at night and it did help me sleep. So I was grateful for that, but I was at the same time so angry with myself because I'd now gone back onto a drug and the whole process is to come off of the drugs and not go
Right.
back onto drugs.
Right. Well, I just rest assured, there are in the benzodiazepine harmed community that our tape rings, some of them do turn to trazodone because there's like no sleep. And for some people, it does work. It's common that some people use it. Of course, rather not, but some
Yeah.
people are getting zero sleep and they need to do something. In your case,
Yes.
though, because a lot of people, instead of Seroquel, I'm sorry, trazodone, they get
Yeah.
prescribed the Seroquel to sleep. So, but obviously,
Oh
you
my
were
God.
tapering that, you know, it happens. We get polydrugged in
Yeah.
this process. So you survive these horrible 6 months. I can only imagine how it was like for me. It was also about 6 months, the benzo hell, but I was just, you know, from coming off the benzo. What happens after the 6 months? Are you off the meds?
No, so that was only five meds that she took me off. I'm on 13 altogether, so I've still got others to come off.
Oh
So
God.
then I hummed and hawed about which one I wanted to do next, and she was telling me, no, just stay on the rest of these. We can, we'll just do it at the lowest possible dosages that you remain on. And I was adamant, no, I want to be drug free. These have ruined my life. I need to be free. So then she said to me, okay, in March the following year, let's come off Simgen, which is in America it's called Cymbalta. It's
Right.
an antidepressant. So I wish I had found the Cymbalta Hurts Worse Facebook group before I began that taper, because she said to me, we're just gonna go, because I was on 60 milligrams, and she said to me, we're just gonna go 60, 30, 60, 30 on alternating days for a month. And then you skip a day, then you skip 2 days. And when she was telling me this, I was thinking, you know what, from what I'd learned, which was very basic at that point, of tapering, I don't think alternating days is a good idea, but she's a psychiatrist, what do I know?
Right.
And I started that 60-30, and oh my word, I wanted to murder everything that moved or blinked. It was horrific. I've got two absolutely adorable fur kids. I don't have two-legged children. These fur kids are my children. I adore them. And I had horrific images of wanting to cut them up with a machete. I mean, what on
Right.
earth? That is totally not me at all. I would lock them in different, in the bedroom or the bathroom or the garage, just to prevent me from doing something unthinkable to them. And even the rage, I would lock myself for a good portion of the day at work in the toilet so that I didn't harm anybody, because I just had this constant, I wanted to murder people. And it's not a case of, just like doing something simple to end them. It was like this, it was always a machete or something violent that included
Right.
blood and guts. And I can't handle blood and guts. So that alone is so foreign as a thought to be coming from me as Jane. And that's what just made me realize, you know what? This taper is incorrect. It cannot be right.
Right.
And I can't remember. Yes, that point I was so angry with her, with a psychiatrist, and having these visions and images of wanting to murder people. I thought it's best for her safety and my future of not going to prison to rather avoid her. And I just decided, let me cold turkey this taper and just do away with the drugs completely, which, oh, it was bad.
the 6 month mark, did it? Did you come off the benzodiazepine, the clonazepam, by then, or was that still on your? Were you still taking it?
No, so I was off the clonazepam. So the Rivotril and Urbanol were totally off in the January already. But so this was all 2021. I did the Simgen in March of 2022.
Right. Well, okay, so let's fast forward a little bit, more towards the now. So how many drugs are you still currently on, and which one do you still have to taper?
So I've still got to come off Trepiline, which is an antidepressant, Stresim, which is a tranquilizer, and Seroquel, which is quetiapine, the antipsychotic.
Antipsychotic, yep.
So I did try and taper off Seroquel last year, beginning in October. And by January this year, I was so hatful of this taper. I just wanted to be done with it. I thought, let me speed up the Seroquel taper. So instead of going from 25 milligrams to 18.75, I went to like 12.65 or something like that. And it was hell. I landed up in hospital. I couldn't breathe. Again, I thought I was dying. So I reinstated the 25 milligrams, which is where I'm at still.
Right.
So
what would you advise anyone listening currently from your country? What can they do, or what shouldn't they do?
Definitely, if I could turn back the clock on my own experience, I would seek out psychotherapy, like talking therapy, to deal with everything that I was going through at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Because the drugs made everything much, much worse.
Right.
And secondly, if people are already on drugs, I would definitely recommend that they read those patient information leaflets and arm themselves with knowledge to know your drugs. Because once you read all the side effects that's associated with the drugs, you start saying, oh, but hang on, I thought this was, you know, bipolar, ADHD, or whatever the case is, in terms of names that's been associated or assigned to these, when in actual fact, it's the drugs.
Right, right. So thank you for that. I know that you mentioned that, you know, you're working on your website. When it goes up, I will put it in the show notes. How can people find you now if they want to be in touch with you?
On Facebook, it's Jane H. Kotzer. It's the same on Instagram.
I'll put the link in the show notes as well for
okay,
the
great.
And yes, you know, you have been on so many different drugs. Are there a few withdrawal symptoms that you are convinced were caused by a certain specific drug, where you're like, okay, that symptom is definitely the Cymbalta, or that one is definitely a benzo, or that one is definitely the Seroquel?
Well, I can say without a shadow of a doubt that the violence was definitely from that horrible taper of the Simgen or the Cymbalta.
Mm-hmm.
So those images of murder and wanting to do horrific things to normal people was definitely the Cymbalta. I think the brain zaps I could associate with the benzodiazepines and probably the antidepressant as well. And the other thing is the brain pressure. It feels like you've got your head squeezed in a vase. And I had that recently now when I came off Epitec as well, which is a mood stabilizer. So the brain pressure is the mood stabilizer, the antidepressant, as well as the anger, the rage.
Right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. I think you're incredibly brave, and I am so sorry that all of this happened to you, and you're such a warrior. even though that you have a taper to go. I'm blessed to meet people like you that despite your journey, you're still marching on and trying to educate other people. So thank you so much, Jane, for coming on the show. I wish you all the best, and hopefully one day we can talk again.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Nathal. I really appreciate this opportunity to chat to you, and thank you for the work that you do as well.
Thank
you. I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the episode. Be well, be safe. Remember, it's not a race, and don't forget to subscribe and rate the show.